It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We're off and running for a brand new week of live, independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting at the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the rollicking, madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just go over to HeadOn.live and click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and zowie, you'll be met and greeted and welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Malin in Jersey and Man Cave and B.T. Blom. Man Cave's there because, of course, so too is Sparky, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. I'm there. Brother Deacon Asa is there. Heck, we're going to have a good time as more folks wander in during the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we do begin this third week of May and with a more and Monday. And it is madcap, and it is zany and wacky and vicious and hateful and all kinds of adjectives. And probably some adverbs along the way as well. The first thing we do with any broadcast, however, is to thank our subscribers. The people who help keep the program on the air, our group of our merry little band knocks down about a week of broadcasting every month and helps us keep things rolling along. So thanks go out to our buddy David out at West Mesa Photography, as well as to Vincent. Thank you, Vincent, for being part of the partial sponsors group of the program. Thank you very much to our buddy David at Shadow Mountain Graphics in Vermont. And thanks as well to Joan in Talibandiana. Yes, indeed. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thanks as well go out to Bernice. Thank you very kindly, Bernice, for your support. And to Carl up in Columbus. Thank you, Carl. Thank you very much indeed. So that's the weekend's worth of subscribers. That's Saturday, Sunday, and this morning. And seriously, that's about a week's worth of broadcasting. And you know what? It's cool. If we can keep up with fundraising through the week, then we will have next week. It will be fundraising free broadcasting, which is I've gotten to where, you know, this is the fifth month we're trying this little experiment, and I've come to really, really look forward to the last week of the month. But that having been said, and the thank yous having been extended, we need to get right into More and Monday because, dear God, we're going to be so damned busy. Note coming in earlier from Ron and Raleigh. Today, Mike Pompeo threatened to bring to bear the toughest sanctions ever. Wait a minute, I think we need reverb for that. Toughest sanctions ever against Iran. What's this fool going to base these sanctions on? The U.S. is the entity that violated the JCPOA. Does he believe he's going to bully Iran and the other signers to the JCPOA because Doofus Donnie doesn't like the agreement as negotiated because it doesn't include missiles and other things to the liking of Israel? Well, I think probably has more to do with the fact that he hasn't figured out a way to make a dollar off of it, but that's just me. Total disarmament is what Trump and Netanyahu want. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to be defenseless in the face of Israeli aggression. These jagoffs don't seem to realize that ballistic and cruise missiles can be used for conventional armaments. Oh, yes, they can. And they pack a wallop. If you recall last week's programs, you know that we know that here in Appalachia because, one good so-called shot on a mountaintop removal site's equal to about 25 cruise missiles landing at the same time in the same place. And it makes a hell of a boom. I mean, to the point that, you know, if one goes off 40 miles away, I can feel it here when the windows rattle. Yeah. But it's Moran Monday. And, look, there's the brutally bloody serious business of what happened Friday in Santa Fe, Texas, the utterly predictable, reasonably foreseeable, see, I told you there'd be adverbs, the reasonably foreseeable horror that unfolded there when the NRA, the wheel of the NRA death roulette landed on Santa Fe, Texas. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff, too. And I know. And look, sometimes I like to focus on the other stuff. Because if you watch the changes second by second news cycle during the day, what you'll find out is that in the for-profit TV media news, they're all talking about the same thing all day long until the next shiny object captures their attention. And so they don't often have time for some of the truly heinous stuff that obtains in this country day by day. I saw, there just seemed to be such a wealth of them today as I began doing my prep and my research, that I was, somewhere along the way, I keep saying, you know, this is not who we are. This is not the country that we are. This is not America. Well, it is. When these things happen and we do something, nothing or next to nothing about it, it is who we are. And I thought we would start this evening with something that I never do. Coverage of a royal wedding. No, really, I don't do that. But this is, wait, well, let's do this right, shall we? Yes.
You gotta remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. We've got them all here for you behind the thin cybernetic veil that is the audio canvas of the Moran Monday tent, just a few steps off the carnival midway. Yes, they're all here. The birchers, the birthers, the deathers, the tenthers, the ninthers, the bagger eaters, the booger eaters, the baggers. There's so many of them, I get confused. They really, really are. The Trumpanzees, the maggots, Republicans, libertarians, conservatives. Yes, they're all here for your amazement, your disgust, your shock, your nausea. Right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Yes, yes, yes. Don't be spending your money over there on the midway throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls trying to win an iguana that you can take home and it'll eventually get big enough to eat the entire family. Don't do that. That's right. Come right on over here, friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kiddies and cousins. Come over here. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. That's right. As you enter the Moran Monday tent, well, by golly, just remember, for folks like I just named off a little bit ago, it's a mere less than half of a McDonald's hamburger, less than 50 cents, no cheese, for everybody who helps keep things going here at the Moran Monday tent. But come on in, come one, come all, and witness with stunned amazement the freaks inside the Moran Monday freak show tent. Advice goes out, of course, to parents of small children. Keep a hand on them. Keep a hand on your wallet. Keep a hand on your purse. Keep a hand on your backpack, your hydration pack, your over-the-shoulder European-style messenger bag. Keep a hand even on that iguana, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will, you will, you will, you will. Like I said, I very seldom waste any time on that humongous overbred, inbred welfare family in the UK. But you got to give credit where credit is due. And by God, the BBC trolled Donald Trump something fierce over the weekend. One suspects that there at the Beeb, they knew that he was absolutely eaten up, that he had not been allowed to attend the royal wedding of Prince Hank and I guess she's Duchess Meghan now. One of the funniest headlines I think I've ever seen cross my news feed this morning said, Where will the Duke and Duchess live now? As if they were out there wandering on the streets with a sign that said, Will Royal for food. But no, I did. I got a giggle out of that. I really, really did. And it was fun to see the BBC Trump with photographs of the people gathered to watch the wedding parade there at Windsor Castle. Mm-hmm. Because there were lots of people, and they juxtaposed that alongside the vast empty spaces of his inauguration. It's irresistible for some. I wouldn't be able to resist. But more to the point, this was a special royal wedding. And none other than Coach Dave Daubenmeyer was there to... he wasn't there. They probably wouldn't allow him in to the sceptred realm. But he couldn't resist offering up some commentary regarding this wedding. Now remember, Coach Dave is, of course, a Christian. Going to go to heaven when he dies and everything. And so he offered some Christian commentary on the royal wedding. You might want to get, it's an early call, but it's Moran Monday. Have it handy. You take it out, put it in, get a good bite on it. The hockey puck, the duct tape, because, and you won't bother the neighbors quite so much. Here we go.
Let me just lay it out there. Because most people won't say it because they don't want to sound racist. But I'm just going to say it. You know that...
He's just going to say it because it only sounds racist. It isn't actually racist. He doesn't want to sound racist. But, well, here's a hint. If it sounds it, and you have to warn people that it's going to sound racist, it probably is. So, well, the hint is out there, and
If you didn't take me seriously about the hockey puck before, I'm sure maybe now you have.
Prince Harry's wife is half black. You guys know that?
No.
The Prince Harry's wife is half black. Now, look, wait a minute. That ain't that. That ain't that royal bloodline lineage there is at them fellas. Isn't there a little bit of...
Yeah, because, you know, there's never actually been a bloodline in the entire world that was royal and had black people in it. No. And, Wakanda is not real, all right? Jesus. She's half black. You know, like that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, who tormented us by being elected president 2 terms in a row.
Isn't there a little bit of mixed blood coming in there? And then I noticed something else. I get inquiring minds want to know. You know that did you see who performed the service? Who?
No. Who performed the service, Dave? Was it a priest? You know, from the Church of England? The official religion of the royal family, Dave? Possibly. Just as a refresher, you might recall that Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, and I think henceforward we'll have to refer to him as Cyclops Dave Daubenmeyer, or Coach Cyclops, or Cyclops Coach, or maybe Kleagel Coach. Kleachel. The possibilities are endless. We'll vote on it at the end of the program. This is the guy who is all upset about female lesbian softball players with big bottoms and short haircuts, and his precious daughters narrowly managed to escape college softball without being lesbianized, I guess. It's probably a little like Martinizing. I don't know.
Performed the service. Did you guys follow that at all? Was it the Bishop of Canterbury or some official?
You know, Bishop of Canterbury's got that racket he runs every Easter, puts out them Canterbury eggs.
Waspy guy that performed the... Was it? Did I miss something? Or did we see the ultimate... how do I say this?
Don't know, Dave.
A blending of the races.
Ooh, blending.
One.
Blending. He had to use the word blending, friends and neighbors, because if he'd used mixing, well, that would have been just a dog whistle too far for Kleagel Dave Daubenmeyer, because the folks over at that website that rhyme with light and fart, they've got all that race mixing stuff. Well, they've got that corner pretty well covered, but it's a blending, you know, when it's just mixed, sometimes there are like swirls and stuff, but as long as it's blended, it's smooth and creamy and blended.
New world order, one world government, the blending of the, in the House of Windsor coming together first time.
Blending in the House of Windsor. We don't have time right now, friends and neighbors, to go into all the blending that's gone on in the House of Windsor. I mean, I'm imagining Her Majesty the Queen was actually kind of happy to get some new blood in that, because at this point in time, the genetic footprint of the House of Windsor is more like it's like a muddy horseshoe print. Let's just say it's the shallow end of the gene pool. And there's a long history of royals with, you know, babies' arms growing out of their heads and ears the size of banana leaves and, you know, all that, you know, lips on their kneecaps, you know, from all the inbreeding. Yeah. House of Windsor. Blending.
a black Episcopal priest minister perform the wedding?
No.
Somebody help me here. Am I overly sensitive here, or is it?
No, you're just a fucking racist, okay? Yeah, you're just a Klansman in literally a silver tinfoil covered ball cap with a big red cross on it, Dave. Lee in New York says, Bob, pick a reason why Trump was not invited to the wedding. He couldn't get a turn at the microphone. They didn't serve fast food. Trump didn't make the Harry Meghan deal. He would not get a chance to nap during the ceremony. He would have to check his cell phone at the door. No tweeting. None of the cameras were closed. That means no YouTube moment for his remarks. Or he didn't get any electoral votes from the UK. Is there a difference between the US and the UK? You know, HPV, HIV. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Or all of those are viable reasons, Lee, and thank you very much. Or there's the fact that it was determined by the Royal House of the Royal Protocol that there would be no political guests at the wedding, and hence maybe that's what assuaged the 71-year-old toddler. The fact that Harry's good pal, Barack Obama, and Michelle weren't there. As long as they weren't there, he wouldn't throw a fit. Subject line, that half-black Meghan Markle. Scott and Punky note, actually, that's the best thing to have happened to the gene pool since they added the high dive and sliding board. Meghan's half-black contribution to the mix helps to dilute the David Ickian alien reptilian shape-shifting DNA that's predominated the royal bloodline for years. Shape-shifting. All right. I told you we were gonna start with a bang.
Anybody else picking up on this? Harry is six. Prince Harry is six from the throne.
Okay, we're gonna do some math here, and even I, who am challenged when it comes to ciphering, I might even be able to keep up. Harry is sixth from the throne. And Dave is holding up all of his left hand and the one thumb of his right. Yes. Six. He's showing them to you. Jim says, you know, the royal wedding, diversity, inclusion, happiness, necessity. Yes. Necessity. And they, you know, it costs a damn fortune, but nobody puts on a show like the British royals do. And for the most part, not entirely, something like 60% of the UK population by one poll really didn't give a damn. But people seemed fairly happy about it. And so, you know, cool, whatever. Ron said a little bit ago, seems a lot of people are incensed about the royal wedding. I didn't watch any of it. However, I wasn't angry about it either. People were saying they didn't care. I think we need a little pomp every now and again. America's pastime is baseball. I don't care who wins the World Series, but I'm not going to goon on those that do. Tell me that if Tiffany Trump plighted her troth that we wouldn't have a big old White House wedding. I wouldn't care about that either. Well, with the caveat, Ron, I'd care how much money they tried to make out of it and how much money it cost us. But it wouldn't be a White House wedding because, remember, it's a shithole, the White House. It's a dump. They'd have to have it down at Mar-a-Lago, you know, where the sinkhole opened up. But now we go back to Klegel Daubenmeyer counting on his fingers.
His brother William's first.
Thanks for playing, Dave. But his daddy, Charles, is first in line. Chuck hasn't abdicated. Chuck hasn't said, nope, thanks, mums, but I don't want it. And so, unless he does something when Elizabeth II goes off to sing with the Bleeding Choir Eternal, then Yeah, he's first, then William. But back to the counting.
William has two sons. They're ahead of Harry. Okay? I'm going to tell you something. If there was any chance that Harry was ever going to be king of England, do you think they really would have let him just choose any woman he wanted?
Choose any woman he wanted. That, of course, is code for, and what he really wanted to say, if he had any chance of ever getting to the throne, do you think they would have let him marry a woman of color? Look, I'm on record as really not giving a tinker's damn and having some pretty open antipathy toward the British royal family, because, after all, it's sort of a kick in the guts to those of us with family that fought in the revolution on this side, you know, the American side, the colonial side, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it doesn't affect me personally, but still, I'm an American. That means that I don't have to walk up to her serene, majestic, noble, high graciousness and kiss her hairy cheek or bow over her hand or lick her ring or put my knee on the floor. I'm an American, and I don't have to bow to no damn royalty, no damn where. See, I'm getting a little redneck about it now. And so, you know, that's the source of it for me. Brother Deacon Asa says, "Don't you see what's happening, Kincaid? In a few short decades, little half-Negro babies are going to be heirs to that there throne." Oh. You see the intensely pale whiteness of the Royal House of Windsor is a big deal to your skinheads and your neo-Nazis and your Klansmen and your right. Mm-hmm. Robert in Australia says, "Living in Australia, we get all the royal family BS shoved down our throats, whether we want it or not. I managed to avoid the latest royal wedding debacle all weekend by watching Squidbillies. Good on you, Robert! An episode of Doctor Who a few years back, there was a character called Liz Ten, a very attractive black woman with a Cockney accent. By the end of the story, we discover she is actually Queen Elizabeth X of Great Britain. How did the writers know?" That's good. But I bet you enjoyed the Squidbillies, too. So, it's kind of weird. Dave manages to count up to his ring finger on his left hand, and he still doesn't notice that he's got William, he's got William's two sons, then he's got Harry. But the thing is, there was recently a ruling, and this would drive him even crazier, that William's daughter can accede to the throne as well. But that still leaves his pinky there, and he kind of gave up on it when he realized he wasn't going to get to six. He must have dropped a stitch somewhere. You know, in the pillowcase.
No.
Just whoever he fell in love with. Of course
not. No.
So what's the message that's being sent to us? Do they love each other? Well, sure, they probably do. Remember, Prince Charles married Diana and at the same time was having a love affair with Camilla. The one he really, really loved was Camilla. But Camilla didn't make it the bloodline. And I think she was divorced, I think. So they weren't going to let him. He was heir to the throne. They weren't going to let him marry just anybody. And is it a psyop that now all of a sudden six to the throne? He ain't never gonna be king. Now it's okay for the crown to be diverse.
Now it's okay for the crown to be diverse. Jesus. Yeah, just when you think that they're never gonna be able to, they can't top that, they do. Now it's okay for the crown to be diverse. Boy, they hate themselves some diversity, don't they? These white wingers. It's okay for the crown to be diverse. You know, with all his complaining about the gay and worrying about lesbian, really butch lesbian softball players, and the fact that Dave knows so much about the royal family, I don't know. Dave, do you like wrestling, Dave? Have you ever seen a man naked, Dave? I'm sorry, that's just shame on me. Yeah, shame on me. But I'm sorry, says Ron and Raleigh, but the children would be quatroons. I mentioned that Doctor Who episode when Harry and Meghan first got engaged. If William keeps having kids, Harry keeps moving back. Well, that's true. That's absolutely true, but stranger things have happened. If there's a great film out there, old, with an absolutely magnificent performance by a guy who then was just plain old Alec Guinness, hadn't been knighted yet. Wasn't Sir Alec. It's called Kind Hearts and Coronets. And God, I think he plays six different roles. And it is a hilariously... It's a hilariously homicidal film. Let's put it that way. And it's worth whatever effort you have to make to get your hands on it. It's one of my favorites. Kind Hearts and Coronets. And it centers on exactly that issue. You know, how many people are in front of inheriting an individual being able to inherit a sizable, entitled, ennobled estate or some such. Yeah. And, here we are, last waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, and we got a Christian preacher out there worrying about the one drop rule. Yeah, hung like Jesus says, dim weak genes hate diversity. I can see where they might. Larry wants to know, has Dave Daubenmeyer ever been to or frequented a Turkish prison? Never seen a grown man naked, Billy. Dave. Jim says, I watched the royal wedding, never had a single negative thought. Soup to nuts was great. P.S. You are naughty. Well, hell, it's May, the weather's warm, I'm back to do a naked radio. What do you want? Yeah. So, that's a starting place, but only a starting place. Because we've got, we got more serious stuff, but then we've also got the general, before we get to the general ugliness, let's stop by Texas Governor Greg Abbott's re-election campaign. You might recall that, like I said, the NRA death lottery reached into the NRA bloody fishbowl and pulled out the name of Santa Fe, Texas last week. And in that massacre, 10 human beings had the universe end forever in a hail of gunfire. It turns out, we learned over the weekend, that it probably happened because a young woman stood up in class and told the murderer, the killer, the massacrer, that she would not, she did not wish to date him, nor would she ever go out with him. And And this drove him to a homicidal rage. Mm-hmm. Now, that having been said, at the very same instant, if you had had the presence of mind to do it, at the very same instant that he was slaughtering 10 and maiming 10 more with a shotgun and a 38 caliber pistol, Demetrios Pigourtsis, if you had at the same time gone over to the re-election campaign website of Texas Governor Greg Abbott, you would have found that his campaign was offering a raffle, for lack of a better term, a raffle of what? That's right, a shotgun. Yes. It used to say, you would have seen it say on this past Friday, win a Texas-made shotgun. And all you had to do was enter your email address and some other basic information that they would need so that they could send you fundraising solicitation emails forevermore. And you could win a Texas-made shotgun. Well, now, the win a Texas-made shotgun contest has been changed to a link on the page that merely says, contest! And offers a $250 gift certificate. Actually, winner will receive a certificate of not more than $250. I guess that means I'm pretty sure the shotgun cost more than $250, but, it was an in-kind donation, so. But they're not going to give up it. They're not going to give up more than $250 to some rube who entered their name on a website. No. That's $250. The shotgun was free. But I knew by yesterday that Moran Monday was going to be special, because America's most notorious gun runner and president now of the wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization in the United States, Oliver North, was hauled out to the Sunday shows, and in particular Fox News Sunday, to deliver himself of the real reasons for the Santa Fe massacre. Yes. Now, and since he's busy being president of the Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, it stands to reason that Ollie he's not going to say anything about, guns being part of it. No, there's lots of other problems. Lots and lots of problems that lead to that massacre.
So let's get specific, because this was the 16th school shooting so far this year. That is the most at this point of the year since they started keeping records after Columbine in 1999. Two, three key specific things that you think would keep our children safe.
Two or three.
Well, one, School Shield would, because School Shield.
Which is what?
It's a program. The NRA introduced it 2 years ago. We'll go do an assessment. Cost the school.
If we just do an assessment, it'll stop school shootings. Just do an assessment with the NRA School Shield program. School Shield program. Yeah, here's the thing, though. Santa Fe High School had actually won awards, because we live in a country now that gives awards for being really, really prepared for a school massacre. They had two armed school resource officers on duty patrolling the hallways. And they'd won an award. It was a major award. But it was the wrong kind of plan because it was not an NRA approved school shield program. Oh, help me, Paddlefoot.
Well, nothing costs the taxpayers nothing to get the assessment as to what the issues are in terms of ingress, egress, the ability to hide a firearm and get it into a school.
First time I've ever heard an NRA spokescreep mention the word egress, as in this way too, which its members have been joyfully paying for tickets to for decades now, this way to the egress. Anyway.
The number of school resource officers you really need, and very few schools actually have that.
Yeah, but let's just talk about that talk about that specifically. This school had two policemen armed roaming the halls. The school administrator said yesterday they considered Santa Fe a hardened school.
But there was no way to detect a firearm being brought into the building.
No, it wasn't hardened enough. See, that's what they mean when they say we got to harden our schools. They got to be hard places, hardened schools.
Okay, you and I came through the lobby here in this building where right now. There was a security desk there. There was a barrier for us to pass through. You can't get on an airplane today without going through a metal detector.
Or taking your shoes off. You know what? That would probably stop the school shootings if only we would make the students take off their shoes to go in. Yes! Yes! By God, Ollie, you've hit on it!
But I was going to say, there's no metal detector in our building. Are you suggesting that there be a metal detector? And I'm not saying that's wrong. A metal detector at the entrance to every school for millions and millions of schools? Students?
Well, if you want to stop the carnage, look.
But only if you want to stop the carnage. Because you're going to have to do it, Chris Wallace, because Ollie North isn't. And the NRA isn't. Because they are, after all, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. They feed on domestic terror. I don't know how many donations they've received since Friday, but I'm sure they have. And I'm sure that Dana Lush and Coleon Noir and Greg Stinkfield and Ted Pantsful Nugent are all getting ready to go out and explain to us how it's our duty to have our children, our grandchildren, bleed for their profits. Yes. But there's one more thing.
In the schools?
If you want to stop the carnage, look, you're not going to fix it by taking away the rights of law-abiding citizens.
No, we might fix it. It's not going to happen, of course, but we might fix it by taking away the goddamn guns of the law-abiding citizens. Let them have their rights all day long, just don't let them have any fucking guns. Yeah, you got a right to own a gun. You can keep it under lock and key down at the town armory, and when you want to go hunting, you go down there and you get it out from the locker, and then you go hunting, and then you bring it back, and you clean it in a safe space, and you don't blow anybody away, and you lock it back up after you're done exercising your Second Amendment rights to blow the living bejesus out of armadillos or birds or, captive elephants on... Right. Jesus God. Mm-hmm. Look, Ollie North doesn't give a damn what happens to somebody in Texas's kid, or somebody in Wisconsin's kid, or somebody in Oregon's kid, or somebody in California's kid. That's unmitigated crap. Ollie North cares about Ollie North. That's all Ollie North has ever cared about.
You've got to fix it in a way that hardens the place sufficiently that those kids are safe inside the door. If that means five metal detectors getting in and out of a high school.
Wow, and so be it. Maybe we can offer a, an endorsement on the diploma that says that kids have been sufficiently hardened by their high school experience. Yes. But this isn't really the heart and soul of the Moranity. No, that would come up a little bit later into the conversation, to wit.
The problem that we've got is we're trying like the Dickens to treat the symptom without treating the disease. And the disease in this case isn't the Second Amendment. The disease is youngsters who are steeped in a culture of violence. They've been drugged in many cases.
Oh, drugged. I don't know, PCP, HPV, meth. They've been drugged to make them want to kill people. I mean, it has nothing to do with a toxic culture of faux masculinity and machismo, where you go and you shoot the girl. This is two of these now, at least, where you go and shoot the girl who doesn't want to go out with you, because if she doesn't want to go out with you, then obviously she doesn't deserve to live. By the way, in both of those instances, one in Kentucky, no, Maryland, one in Maryland, and now one in Texas, Sonny Boy went and got Pappy's gun. Now, here's an interesting wrinkle. In Texas, if a kid gets your gun and goes and hurts somebody and you negligently stored the gun, then, you know, maybe a jury might think about convicting you. But the Texas law only applies to children under 17. Dimitrios Pegourtsis was 17, and thus the law does not apply. And no one, and neither Mr. nor Mrs. Pegourtsis, need worry about being prosecuted for the fact that they left gut-loaded guns laying around that their son could go and use to commit a massacre with. Subject line coming from Terrace. We're having a war for peace, elementary school edition. Guess which students will get shot by gun-toting hallway monitors and teachers and which will not? I suppose school employees will be, like police officers, indemnified for shooting darker-skinned boys first and asking questions later. I thought Alberto's pen was a gun and rightfully blew his eyeballs out of their sockets. Freedom! God bless America. But they've been drugged. And the easy access to Pappy's guns had nothing to do with it. And Pappy was, after all, a law-abiding citizen. And remember, Ollie said in the earlier clip that, you know, the remedy is not to take away the rights of law-abiding citizens, except for the fact that if you'd taken away the rights of Mr. Pegourtsis, law-abiding citizen, young Dimitrios would not have been able to go and get the gun quite so easily that he then used to slaughter 10 people and maim 10 more. Oops. But the drugs. It's about the drugs.
They've been drugged in many cases. Nearly all of these perpetrators are male, and they're young teenagers in most cases. And they've come through a culture where violence is commonplace. All we need to do is turn on a TV, go to a movie. If you look at what has happened to the young people, many of these young boys have been...
Hold it on a damn minute, Ollie. You felon saved by an appeal? Hold on. Uh, He said, we live in a violent culture. All you have to do is turn on the TV. Yeah, Ollie. You turn on the TV and you find the continuing coverage of the slaughter in Santa Fe, the slaughter in Parkland, the slaughter at Newtown, the slaughter in Aurora, the slaughter in Tucson, the slaughter in Columbine. One a week for every week of 2018, which is not that far from its halfway point. Right. Oh, but it's movies. It's movies. Oh, okay, okay. Albert in Rhode Island says, Bob, having to check your weapon at a government-owned armory and go hunting is an idea that's practiced in Russia. It's also apparently practiced in Massachusetts. Or so I've been told. It's also practiced in other countries that, you know, aren't Russia. I know, Albert's playing. Renee, by the way, I got to share this just because it's enjoyable. Going back to Kleagle Dave Daubenmeyer, Renee says, dude seriously needs to get out more or pick up a book on African kingdoms, and he may find out about Shaka Zulu or the Zulu kingdom or, say, you know, Egypt, and find a pharaoh or two or three. Yeah, well, but those pharaohs weren't black. It's very obvious. Have you never seen the Ten Commandments? The pharaohs and the Nefertitis were white, damn it, white people. That's why they're painted white on the tomb walls, except they're not. Renee continues and says, something tells me locking up the household arsenal would be more effective than locking up a medicine cabinet or a better childproof Ritalin bottle. I've got a bottle of Ritalin and I'm not afraid to use it. Here, everybody take Ritalin. Well, you've got an argument, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, I think it might be time you modify America's largest, most wealthy domestic terror organization to America's largest, wealthiest terror organization and take the domestic out, period. NRA's terrorist activity eclipses anything Al-Qaeda or ISIS have ever been able to achieve in terms of killing Americans. Hell, those forlorn Arabs can't hold a candle to the NRA's carnage. I know, they're not very good at it, are they? Meanwhile, Larry says, Ollie North is a gun-humping, Iran-Contra, guilty, shucking, and jiving cuck. He's a cuck, Bob. Hey, don't mention Oregon and him in the same talk as he may end up coming here. Yes, I wonder if Iran-Contra hardened his heart. And see what he did there, hardened. And made him swallow his fake tears. I wish he would turn and leave us here, free from his cuckness. He ain't going nowhere. Because the checks keep clearing. But remember, the problem is violent movies and TVs and stuff.
Go to a movie. If you look at what has happened to the young people, many of these young boys have been on Ritalin since they were in kindergarten. Now, I am certainly not a doctor. I'm a Marine. But
okay, I'm going to have some help with the obligatory Star Trek reference this evening. Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a Marine. Not much of a Marine either, considering the dishonor that he brought to that uniform. Yeah. But the other part of it is, you know, many of these boys have been on Ritalin since they were three or four. Does he have some inside knowledge that Dimitrios Pigortsis had been on Ritalin since he was three or four? Yeah, I don't think so. There's one more part of this clip.
I can see those kinds of things happening and endangering those two gals.
There. That. We had to wait all the way to the end of the clip endangering those two gals. Buffalo gal, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight. Come out tonight. Buffalo gal, won't you come out tonight and I'll blow out your freaking brains. Gals. Maybe by next week he'll be calling them cuties. Or hotties. Or those two babes, or those two chicks. Gals. Lee says, regarding the Ten Commandments, the NRA lesson to be learned, it took an NRA president to save the Jews so they could get back to the promised land so that Jesus could bring about the rapture. Who cares that Jesus was not born yet? Oh, now that's a clever Charlton Heston reference, Lee. Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. You better watch yourself, mister, or some hot shot ape pilot's gonna flame your ass. Yeah, I know, Asa. Asa says, yes, damn it, you turn on the TV and all you see is violence. Programs like War Games with Oliver North, which glorify bombing brown people, or old spaghetti westerns where Charlton Heston slaughters the Injuns en masse. Goddamned violent TV programs. All you gotta do is turn on the television, gals. Maybe that's the problem. Boys on Ritalin are watching the violent TV, and the gals aren't. Well, you know, they're off and they're decoupaging or scrapbooking or knitting or whatever the latest fad is, and they're not watching the violent TV like the young boys are. No, thank God they're not, because the gals would probably be more violent. Oh, I know, Tracy. Driving around somewhere, probably on the 9 and 15 16ths, says, don't forget about Ritalin, Bob. No. And see, here's the problem with the whole Ritalin thing. Yeah, these kids are on Ritalin. In the American population, 15% of males and 6.7% of females have been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, in which the drug of choice is usually Ritalin. Those numbers come from the National Institute of Mental Health. And, there's nothing to indicate that a kid on Ritalin is more likely to shoot up a school than a kid who isn't. More particularly, from a statistical standpoint, there is no data whatsoever that a kid on Ritalin with no access to firearms is more likely to shoot up a high school than a kid who's not on Ritalin but has access to daddy's loaded .38 pistol and loaded, I presume, 12-gauge shotgun. There's no statistics on it, but we've got at least one damn fine piece, no, two damn fine pieces of anecdotal evidence that being able to get at daddy's guns, because daddy's a law-abiding gun owner, has a direct and proximate effect on the ability of little high school girls to actually grow up to become women. And, of course, wrapped up in all of this, because we talked about it a little while back. Yeah, I did notice that. Tracy pointed out, did you happen to notice how he failed to mention that the shooters are white? Well, I think that goes without saying, because, only young white boys on Ritalin are watching violent television and movies and playing video games. young black men on Ritalin are out listening to that hippity-hoppity music and not wearing their pants pulled up sufficiently high up to their nipples. See how it works? Yeah. But once again, and not to drive the, not to belabor the point too much more, but I have no doubt that if anybody had asked around town there in Santa Fe, hey, the junior varsity defensive tackle's daddy, yeah, Mr. Pegortsis, he's a good upstanding member of the community, isn't he? Why, yes, and he's even a lawful gun owner. Well, good for him. That means he loves America. Yeah. Because, I mean, lawful gun owner. The only problem is, the difference between the L and the A is the distance traveled by the firing pin to strike the primer in the shell that sends that ignites the gunpowder that sends the bullets spinning through the riflings of the barrel. But there's one more little bit of irony, because the law can't touch him in Texas. Mr. Pegortsis will remain a lawful gun owner, even though his lawful guns, negligently stored, maintained. No, they weren't negligently maintained, by God. They worked as advertised. But certainly negligently secured or unsecured. Even though that was the case, he's going to remain a lawful gun owner. And hey, who knows? It's Texas. Maybe after the trial's over and everything, if young Demetrios doesn't just plead guilty, maybe Mr. Pegortsis can get his shotgun and his .38 caliber pistol back, because remember, firearms in America are a highly liquid asset, and I'm sure somebody would love to own those. You don't doubt me on that, do you? Meanwhile, note coming in from Clarity. Forever at war with Malongo. Adderall is legal crank. Fuck Ritalin. Don't tell me how to dock shop, Bob. Wait a minute, voice. Don't tell me how to dock shop, Bob. One of three pills manufactured gets diverted. What we need is a well-regulated pharmacy trade. We know a little bit about that. Not from the Adderall perspective, but from the OxyContin, hydrocodone, roxycodone. You know, enough for every man, woman, and child in the entire state of West Virginia dumped into one little tiny pharmacy. Yes. White shooter, says Lee. The terms automatically go together. If you say shooter, the unstated adjective is white. Alternatively, if the term terrorist is used, it does not need to be stated that the person was not white. Oh, yes. Meanwhile, Todd with a note. Star Trek, Ollie. How did McCoy say, damn it, Jim, so many times like that without having a stroke? Why is Ollie North given a platform, especially since we're dealing with the fallout from destabilizing Central America, thanks to him? Good question. But then again, that's why we have Fox. Good question coming in from Scott and Punky. Yeah, but what's your excuse, Ollie? Based upon your ancient visage, your wonderbread years happened long before the invention of Ritalin. So then what accounts for your criminality and aberrant behavior, bub? You must have come by it the old-fashioned way, dropped on your snake-filled head as a small child. Snake-filled head. That's very good, Scott. Wait a minute. That's good for a little jingle. Absolutely. And so that'll hopefully cover the Santa Fe stuff. I mean, what's his doofus? I think the lieutenant governor of Texas was out there blithering about how schools only need to have one door. Right, because like in the case of an emergency where kids have to get out of school, like when there's a shooter in it, that one door becomes a killing field. That's right. This past weekend really brought out the geniuses in the firearms pandemic denial industry. So let's take a break, and we'll go backwards in the program a little bit with a long-distance dedication to Megan. Not so much to Harry, but to Megan. Going out from the horn to the Duchess of Suffolk. And don't worry, you don't have to be all particular. You know, Southerners are like this. There's a city on the coast of Virginia called Norfolk. N-O-R-F-O-L-K, Norfolk. And it's named after a city in England. But Southerners, ever so careful about making sure that they are not saying anything uncomplimentary or untoward or quite possibly vulgar, they'll go to great pains to call it Norfolk. Make sure you know that they're saying folk and not fuck. And so I'm sure all over the South, properly brought up Southern women and men who were raised right are saying, wait, she's going to be the what? The Duchess of Suffolk? Yes, Suffolk. Nah, it's a long-distance dedication going out to the Duchess of Suffolk from all of us here at the Horn. Phone lines are open. Jump right in if you want. We'll be back. I'm Bob. God, I love that song. I mean, there's a lot of great Tom Petty songs out there, but that may actually be my favorite. It just that jangling guitar and American Girl, Tom Petty. Hard to believe we're coming up close to a year since Tom Petty died. Shame. By the way, I was wrong. Yeah, this is the program where when I make an egregious error, I admit it. Apparently, they are the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, which just ruins that entire little comic bit entirely. But thank you, Steve in New York, for pointing that out. But it, still, Southerners are all over the place. Every time the your daughter's in the Navy? Where? Norfolk. Well, I've heard that's a mighty big naval base there at Norfolk. I can't help it. I love language. By the way, I didn't say anything about it, but we got $200 to raise this evening. And I've run out of ways to say it. So we got $200 to raise this evening. And it would be mighty nice if we did, because with next week being fundraising free radio, there are bills to pay. So there's that. Thanks in advance to anybody who responds. Thank you very much indeed. The links to PayPal are over at headon.live. Okay. I had no idea. And I'm going to the phones in a sec. Scott and Punky kindly, this is just a little cultural help. Here's how they keep the pronunciation straight there in that town with the Norfolk High School cheer. We don't smoke. We don't drink. Norfolk. You missed your calling, Scott. You really did. That's just delightful. And there's a... Yeah, that's a toot jingle. Yeah. Let's go check in with, I think, Tracy. Is that you, Tracy?
Yes. How are you, Bob?
Well, I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm fine.
Somewhere out on the 7, out on the 7, the 15, 16th, yes?
Yeah, I'm on the 101, stuck in traffic as usual, but,
You know what, you're not going to believe me, but I actually thought of you while I was gone last week, sitting on 395 and then 95 for 5 hours to go 95 miles from Washington, D.C. to Richmond.
I've had that happen. I was coming back from Palm Springs. And there was an accident on the 10. Was it? Yeah, the 10 freeway. And which is a freeway that if I wanted to come to the east, I could just get on the 10 and keep heading east. But there was an accident, like right after we got out of Palm Springs, and we couldn't move. The freeway was basically shut down, and it was like a 4 or 5 hour ordeal, just from the to clear the freeway or what have you, and it was just
And the thing is, I don't think there might have been a couple of little fender benders along the way, but this was just Thursday in D.C. It's every
right.
day that way.
Yeah, it's like here. It's just the traffic is getting worse and worse. I mean, typically, like in the mornings, I normally would have to I would leave at 7:30 to get to where I have to be by 8, but now it's like. Every day, it's like now it's 7:25, then it's 7:20, and then it's 7:15 to go basically 10 miles. And it's just ridiculous. And it's not getting any better. So, you just have great tunes, or you listen to podcasts, or, books on audio or audiobooks or what have you. Because if you don't, you're going to lose your ever loving mind. Oh, you know what? You even though you got sucks it. See, I can't even say it. You can mess with that and say suck it. The Duke and Duchess of Suck It.
That's absolutely correct. I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that's holding up, well, holding down the banner of prurient interest on this program.
Well, you know, I mean, I have to admit, Bob, okay, I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday to watch the wedding. Yes, I did. But, you know, I was glued to my television, just to watch, because I was just dying to see what the dress was going to look like and all that. But my favorite part of the wedding, my all-time favorite part of the ceremony, was the black minister preaching and watching the faces of the royal family going, what the fuck is going on here?
He laid down some gospel, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I was about to use
the brown word. You know, he laid down some, but that's probably not appropriate for like a.
No, probably not. But it was awesome. I mean, it was a great sermon. But like I said, the best part was watching how uncomfortable the white people were, because they were just like,
"Squirm, you bastards!
Squirm, you bastards! You limey bastards! You."
Now, did you say whiny or limey?
So I rewound it just to watch the expressions, like, you know, because I guarantee you, I probably none of them have ever been to a black church. So it's like, you know, and I guess the brother was like, this is probably the last time I will ever be invited to this place, so I'm going to lay it down. And it was just awesome. But he has some really great things to say. And I was just like, because I'm listening to him, I'm like, wait a minute, because I didn't hear where he was from. And I'm like, wait a minute, he's black and he's American? And then we see that the Queen's chaplain was a black woman. I'm like, white people are probably just dying. They're just like, wait a minute. It's bad enough that we got a half breed up in this bitch, but now we got black people officiating and the black woman is the Queen's chaplain. And then they had the cellist who was black and a black gospel choir. Oh my God. I don't know how people's heads were exploding all over the country.
You heard the clip from Klegel Daubenmeyer there at the beginning of the program, didn't you?
Yeah.
Now the royal house has to be we got to have diversity in the House of Windsor.
God damn it. But like you said, they need some black blood up in that bitch. All that inbreeding and shit. There was somebody. I actually read a quote that one of the royals actually said this, that we need some dark blood. And I mean, I'm pretty sure he meant brunettes or what have you, but he knew that the bloodline was...
Oh, that one came out of left. Oh, my God. Sorry, you hurt me.
You okay, Bob?
Yeah, I will be in a minute. I'm sure they meant brunettes or something.
Well.
Now, Hank, this is not what we meant when we said we need...
dark blood.
Some dark blood in the family.
And the one I can see doing it is not Elizabeth, but her nasty old racist husband.
Philip, yes.
Yeah, because I can see him playing the old white guy in Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
He says the bride's near.
No, God darn it. The bride's...
Ding! God bless Richard Pryor.
Oh, God. He was a genius. He was definitely a genius. Oh, God. For those people who don't know that he was actually the screenwriter for Blazing Saddles. And he was supposed to be in the movie. He was absolutely supposed to be in the movie, but they thought because the comedy was so blue, whatever that, you know, because he was just a bit too,
well,
you know,
his onstage stuff was so edgy that they thought it might, so Cleavon, and you know, you can't argue with the performance that Cleavon Little gave. I mean, please.
Oh, Cleavon Little was a god. I'm sorry. He was a god. Did you know, Bob, that there was actually, they actually had a pilot for Blazing Saddles, a TV show?
No.
Yes, they did.
Now, what kind of a disaster would that have been?
Well, I actually, if you can Google it and find the pilot, because I don't know how I found this, but guess who played the sheriff?
Who?
Louis Gossett.
No shit.
No shit. I was like, what? I mean, it didn't last. I mean, but yes, they actually shot a pilot for Blazing Saddles, the TV show.
Well, one of the things that I thought about with that, one second, Tracy, please.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just had a chat with Agnes for a minute there. No, I don't know if in Kliegel Daubenmeyer's little recitation there, the whole idea about she's half black.
Like we didn't know
when I hear alleged Christians going on like that, I can't help but point out. I mean, they really, really do think that Jesus was, like, paler than me, don't they?
Yes, they do. They really, really do. And it's like, okay, Palestinian, brown man. And even, the Jews were dark-skinned. Yes, they're dark-skinned.
Well, I mean, kind of had to be. Nilo-Saharan.
Kind of had to be. There's a lot of sun and shit. I mean, they weren't in the north. I don't think there was too many blonde folks hanging out back in the day. And that's just, plain old simple evolution.
Well, I mean, we pale people are a fairly new evolutionary thing.
Yes, you is.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It probably Ice Agey, or no more than 7,000 years, right? That's what the given number is. So,
sounds about right.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised how much of a little internet gutter there is over issues of color in the ancient world, because all that hype. I have wanted to do one of those genetic tests for years and years and years, just because history and genealogy fascinates me so much.
Why haven't you done it?
Well, because that. No, because there's A, there's the money involved, and two.
Oh, that's true.
There's the issue of the insecurity of the data now. I don't know if you've seen those articles or not.
That's how that's how they caught the guy, the Gold Coast, whatever, the killer out here, because of some genealogy thing, database or whatever. So I can.
But they've done, like I said,
I'm a convicted felon, so it doesn't matter. I'm already in the DNA. Here it got by, so it's no big deal.
But there's also, but they've done legitimate research, and for instance, you can find out that ancient Britons, okay? And we're talking about, people who were there, like, when the Romans showed up, were of Syrian and Lebanese stock. No kidding. And basically from all over the place. And one of my favorite academics and public intellectuals and BBC presenters had the, and she's a woman, of course, had the unmitigated nerve to publish based on her expertise of the classical world, Mary Beard. Her videos, you'd love them, Tracy. They're just wonderful. Just go to YouTube, look up Mary Beard, Ancient Rome, whatever. You'll be off down the internet rabbit hole. And because she has no problem saying that ancient Rome was a very diverse population. And she pointed out the fact that there were very likely a considerable number of brown folks in Britain during the time of the Roman occupation, because Rome brought in its soldiers from all over creation.
And let's not forget about the Moors.
And it caused an absolute
outright
white conniption. Because, of course, which movie? What?
Did you ever see the movie True Romance?
No, I don't think so.
Well, there's this, and it's kind of tying back to what you're saying, because there's a scene with Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken. And Dennis Hopper is talking about how the Moors invaded, Italy.
Oh,
and
wait,
all
is
that.
This the with the Sicilian and no?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought that was
that True Romance?
I thought that was Harvey Keitel.
No, it was Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken.
Okay.
Harvey Keitel might have done something like that, but usually when those movies like that talks about, the pureness of white people has been, invaded by black people, I always hone in on shit like that because it just tickles me. And so that is like my favorite scene because, Dennis Hopper is just going on and on about the Moors and stuff like that. And basically, because Dennis, what's his name? Christopher Walken is Italian. And so in the movie, rather. And so when he's going on about, black people, black men fucking and all this, and basically that you're black, that since you're Sicilian, more than likely there's black in your genes. Oh yeah, he didn't like that.
Oh, I
they don't like it when they don't like that, do they, Bob?
Well, no, it drives it, and it's almost, you get into parts of the South and it's almost unavoidable.
How is it that all these people down South who don't believe that there's any black, there's no Negroes in the wood pile? Come on. I mean, especially for all those...
Time out. She used that phrase. I didn't.
Make sure the audio is... I said it. Tracy Porter, a black woman. Make sure everybody knows that I'm black. That I said it.
But,
so there won't be...
Yeah, because, when old... went down to the quarters, he wasn't going down there just because the cooking was better.
No, and not to check on the, not for a knitting circle or anything like that. No.
No, that's why I refer to, it's a fact. And there are people out there that would, to hear me compare Thomas Jefferson and Donald Trump, but it's true. We have two presidents who have been credibly accused of sexual assault. One of them's Donald Trump. The other one's Thomas Jefferson.
Well, exactly. I mean, you figure, I look at...
Sally was incapable
she
of consent.
She wasn't a willing participant.
No, she was incapable of consent. Yeah.
No. And just think about all the black people who passed for white. And so...
Herbert Hoover, is that you, buddy? Hey, Herb. Herbert.
J. Edgar, and who else? And I heard, there's a thing, I heard that Dinah Shore and Carol Channing, who else? I mean, so come on. And I, as a black person living in this country now, in 2018, can't blame anybody back in the day for trying to pass for white. Or not trying to, but succeeding to pass for white. Because this country is so fucked up that the only way they saw that they were going to be able to succeed in this country was to be considered white. So I can't, it's like, people hate, black people today hating on Hattie McDaniel and stuff like that back in the day because, they only played maids and stuff like that and step and fetch it and all that. But what choice did they have? if they wanted to be in the movie. They weren't casting him as nuclear physicists or anything like that. They were casting him as maids and what have you. Or, you know, black people playing pimps and prostitutes and all these things.
Oh, look, all the way up into the 80s. What was that fantastic comedy?
Hollywood Shuffle?
Yes.
Yeah.
That kept coming back to the guy who was going for the audition, just trying to be the perfect gang member.
Thug.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you work with what you're working with until you get to that point, like Robert Townsend did, you know, that you're able to make your own movies and to be in your own TV shows, or Spike Lee, and all, you know, that I'm not a Spike Lee fan. We've had this discussion. I don't like him. But, you know, there's only two movies that he's ever made that I like, Crooklyn and Malcolm X. That's it, of all the movies that he made. And so it's like, but you do what you have. Like somebody said, you do what you have to do in order to do what you want to do. So, you know, I can't be mad at black people for, you know, well, let me take that. Let me backpedal. I did have a two when I would watch these movies and stuff like that. I'm like, how could they do this and how could they do that? And then as I got older, then I'm realizing, I'm like, but they had no choice. It's like Hattie McDaniel said, I'd rather play a maid and get paid to play a maid than to be one. That woman was a millionaire when she died. Okay? So it's like, you know what?
Couldn't eat in a restaurant, couldn't stay in a hotel, but was a millionaire.
And
that'll buy you your own pretty nice house.
Exactly. You know, we're talking $1 million in 1940s money. So it's like, come on. Like I said, I can't be mad at her. It's like, you know what, sis? You know, because she paved the way for everybody else. For, you know, people like Viola Davis, who, you know, and you know, who's won a Tony, an Oscar, an Emmy. The only thing she hasn't won yet is a Grammy. This year was that an EGOT? When you run Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony, yeah. So, you know, she paved the way for people like her. So I'm like, I can't be mad. You know, it's derogatory and it's stereotypical and all that. But again, it's like, what, you know what? Do what you have to do. Her and Rochester and all of them. Rochester was rich too. And, you know, hey, like I said, I can't be mad. So speaking of not being mad, I can't be mad at, here's a nice segue, I can't be mad at the lieutenant governor of Texas who said that the reason why we have, you left that part out. No, you said you forgot about you said the doors, but you forgot about abortion. That's the reason why.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes. The evil, sinful daughters of Eve and their abortions.
And their abortion, because we live in a godless country, and you know, God's not here, and because people have an abortion, so that is why we have school shootings. When I heard that one, because I didn't watch the Sunday shows yesterday, I was, you know, doing other stuff like sleeping. When I heard that this morning, and I actually had to, I Googled it so I can hear the whole interview, and I'm just like, wow. And even George Stephanopoulos, a Snuffleupagus, was just like, but wait, what?
You know, I did. And by the way, Todd down in South Carolina stands, says, Tracy's right on. And don't forget about Heather Locklear. Pink Lives Matter. Damn straight they do.
Wait, what about Heather Locklear?
I'm just reading you the email. That's all. I got nothing.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Hung Like Jesus says, Bob, if they gave everyone down here a DNA test, we'd have more suicides in one day than the entire nation of Japan at the end of World War II.
I think DNA tests should be required for every Klansman. I mean, it's you know what? It's only for the good of them, because they talk about the purity of the race, right? Shouldn't they know that all their members are pure white?
Well, you would think so, but they tried that a couple of times, and it worked out hilariously. But at the same time, I mean, this is not a joke. The response of the racist was to say, well, you know, that just shows how inaccurate the science is.
So they had an out.
Right.
Because science.
It's a deep state conspiracy, Tracy. For more of that, what Klegel Daubenmeier was talking about, your race blending.
Race blending.
Yes.
I'm
not going to be happy until we get to race frappeing.
Or frappuccinos. Race frappuccinos.
Yeah,
how about that?
Right, there we go. Well, because we're all going to be the color of cappuccino then.
But I have to say that Ancestry DNA last month, had a sale. And their tests were like $40 each. So I went ahead and got myself one, Alex one, because it was his birthday. And Jan won, because Jan's adopted, so she has no idea, you know, what her lineage is. So we did the test, so we're waiting for the results, because it takes about a month. And I did kind of freak out, you know, because I remember we talked about this, and you said, don't do it. But I did kind of, because you were talking about, you know, Mormons and their genealogy thing.
Yeah, your entire family is going to be dead baptized now.
Yeah, when I saw the return address for the test, it is in Utah.
Oh, yes. Ancestry.com is in Utah, and they've done genealogy work with the Mormon Church.
That kind of freaked me out a little bit.
A little bit.
So, but I will let you guys know.
Please. And, you know, I guess I'm a different kind of person. I'm one of those vive la différence persons, you know, that there's beauty in diversity. Like that's a bad word or something. But I know what I know what mine's going to come back. I mean, because I know enough about, you know, man, it's gonna be a whole shit ton of England, a little bit of Wales. A little smattering, a little bit more of Scotland, and probably a couple of lone Germans wandering around in there. And, you know, maybe they'll take me back to, say, you know, Sweden or Norway or something, Finland, I don't know. But I got a feeling I'm just boring. Just boring.
So you know how great diversity is just for food, because, you know, I went to London and I mean, I got, you know, I went to different parts. I went to, you know, like Brixton with the, you know, Jamaica, you know, the black, mostly black, and, you know, in parts where it's mostly Indian. So that's where I ate most of my food while I was there. But let's face it, white people's food, not so much, you know, it's like,
I'll have a nice plate of bangers and mash.
And mash.
How about a big plate? How about a big plate of spotted dick?
About that. Ooh, that just sounds so nasty.
Yeah, doesn't it?
I did have bangers and mash. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't. I had to try it. I'm like, okay. I went to a pub, then I actually had bangers and mash.
Well, I mean, I've done this before. You go. I go off on my tangents about the marvels of the Columbian Exchange and all the national dishes of all these European countries that didn't freaking exist before 1492.
Right.
You know, I read I've mentioned it before how much I love this book. I'm probably going to go back and reread it, just because I love to read things over and over again. It comes from being raised on the Bible. You're always out there looking for new meaning. But there's a book by Barbara Tuchman called A Distant Mirror, and it's all about the 14th century. Now, in the 14th century, you know, you had the spice trade coming from Asia. That was part of the, and closing down the Silk Road was part of the whole Crusades thing. It was commercial as much as religious. So, you know, you had the stuff that, the spices that come from Asia. But, you know, in 1491, there was not a tomato in Europe. There was not a there was not a potato in Europe. There was no corn. There were no chili peppers, no squash, no beans. Okay? Imagine the entire Italian boot, which we wrongly think of as being wall-to-wall tomato sauce, had not a drop. And in fact, it took about 200 years for white folks to get over the fact that they were convinced that the natives here were trying to poison them by getting them to eat tomatoes, because the tomato is a part of the deadly nightshade family. And if you ate like 1,000 green tomatoes, you would be deader than Pharaoh's house cat.
Yeah, but
I think your stomach would explode before then. But, you know, imagine German cuisine without a damn potato. Imagine Italian cuisine without a tomato. Imagine...
Or pasta. Hello?
Well, that came from Asia.
Exactly.
And but the Colombian exchange in particular, I mean, you can go on and, you know, no polenta. I mean, in large part, the root vegetables that most of Europe ate were turnips. Now, I like a turnip as much as the next guy.
But I could kill a turnip.
But I don't want it every day of my life.
No.
And a turnip's not loaded with the nutritional value that the what made the Colombian exchange such a big deal, is all of those unique Western Hemisphere foods pack a bigger nutritional wallop than do the previous diet. And you know, when the DeSoto expedition came marching through the Southeast, they were scared to death of the indigenous people, because they were about 8 inches on average taller than the puny little Spaniards. No kidding.
Thank God for guns, huh, Bob?
God, well, you know, it's like the name of that book, Guns, Germs, and Steel.
There's an actual book named God's, what is that again?
Guns, Germs, and Steel. Jared Diamond.
Yep, that's about it. That's about what, you know, that's what conquered America and all the, and everybody, everywhere else. Let's see, germs, syphilis, smallpox, gonorrhea, what else?
Chicken pox, the mumps, measles.
Chicken pox, the mumps, measles.
The common cold.
All this stuff, because they had, you know, these people had an immune system, but, well, it's like sickle cell anemia. It's like you bring people to where they're not used to, or bring stuff in, what do you think is going to happen? But,
well,
you know,
I mean, unless there's been a big change in the understanding, the evolutionary biology of sickle cell anemia in people of color is a response to mosquitoes, and particularly malaria, because if you carry the sickle cell, you are immune to malaria, and that is and that's actually a fundamental part of why the slave trade began, because there was what was called the seasoning line in North America. Basically, the southern the line between Pennsylvania and Maryland, below that seasoning line, you had a pretty good chance of getting dead in the first 2 years being here if you were white.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't
have the Constitution.
And then, well, you couldn't resist the damn mosquitoes. And yellow fever and malaria outbreaks were common. I mean, to this day, the Congress goes on holiday in August in D.C. because that arose out of the fact that it was built on a swamp, and if you did not leave D.C. in August, you might not make it out of D.C. except feet first come September.
Well, they don't need that rule now. It's like we need the Electoral College. I'm sorry, did I say that?
Yes, you did, and that's true. Lee points out, of course you like diversity, Bob. IDIC, infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And that's how you get evolutionary growth.
Yeah, because like back to what we were talking about with the, you know, the royals. You know, they were dying out. They need dark meat. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just you need a strong stock of folks, and that's like you said. That's what brought that idiot with the slave trade. You know, and the Indians were like, the Native Americans were like, no, motherfuckers, y'all can't make us slaves. That's not going to happen. So he brought along the Africans, and it was just like. And they could handle it, which is a horrible thing to think about. But you know, what can you do? We can handle slavery. Isn't that awesome? Can't handle much of anything else, but we can handle slavery. You can't teach you how to read or anything like that. And you know, it's what tickles me about because Africans were able to with the malaria and all this and the mosquitoes, but we are an inferior race. How does that happen?
Well, that's the other trick. We were talking about Romanized Britain a little bit ago. Only with the age of colonialism does the concept of race get invented.
Yep.
And it gets invented
somehow.
It gets invented by the Portuguese, the Spanish, the Dutch, and the English, and the French.
You have to make sure that the people that you are enslaving aren't considered human, and they're inferior, and they, you know, the only thing they're good for is labor, and you know, free labor with that. So you know, whatever, by any means necessary. I'm just saying, motherfucker. And you have what's the fool's name that you were talking about this afternoon at the beginning of the show?
Dave Daubenmeyer.
Daubenmeyer. And as a result of, you know, 400, 500, 600 years of the bullshit, we still have people like him thinking that black people, brown people are indeed inferior. Because, you know.
Well, okay, here's a funny story, and this kind of fits in with More in Monday. The Mormon church was beset by a bit of an embarrassing situation a couple of weeks ago. Because, let's see how this went. A parody Mormon site that looked really convincing went up.
This is not going to end well.
And offered a very strongly worded apology for the inherent racism of its policies for like 200 years.
Oh, that black people were monkeys and had tails?
And, you know, couldn't go to Mormon heaven and couldn't be a priest and, yeah. Here it is. I just found the story. A fake site posted an apology for the Mormon Church's history of racism. Black Mormons wish it was real.
It's not. It's religion. Black Mormons like black Republicans.
No, but this is funny. On June the 1st, the Mormon Church will celebrate the 40th anniversary of the revelation that black men should be allowed to be full members of the church. It took a revelation. And so there was Mormon President Russell Nelson had a meeting in Salt Lake City with national leaders of the NAACP. Okay. Well, at the time that happened, that fake website went up, and I mean, it looks like the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints newsroom, the official resource for news media, opinion leaders, and the public. Okay. And It goes on, it says, on Thursday, May 17th, 2018, LDS Church President Russell M. Nelson and his counselors and the Quorum of the Twelve met with the national leadership of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People at the Church Administration Building. Blah, blah, blah. President Nelson issued the following statement. As I look around, I am reminded that this is not the first time leaders of our church have sat in council with the leadership of the NAACP. The first meeting in 1963, prior to the October General Conference, resulted in a remarkable statement on civil rights read by President Hugh B. Brown over the tabernacle pulpit. It was a beginning. As I ponder on it now, I recognize how much we as a church must learn from our past. And he goes on and he says, and he offers, today, as prophet, seer, and revelator, and president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I offer a full, unqualified apology for the error of racism which was taught from this office and in the tabernacle and over the pulpits of our churches the world over. I am joined by my counselors in the First Presidency and the full quorum of the 12 Apostles in making this apology, and we collectively bear witness and testimony of the devastating effects of racism which were perpetuated by leaders of the church in the past. And, I mean, this thing goes on for pages and pages. I mean, line after line after line. And it was entirely fake. Which so then left the Mormon church in the position of having to apologize for the fact that their apology for how racist their religion was wasn't real, and they really didn't apologize. That was a beautiful thing.
On that note, that just makes my day. And I'm going to let other people talk. But as usual, it was awesome talking to you.
Oh, it was a joy.
It makes my day. It makes my day because that right there. And where is this shot? Because I want to read this. Where is it? Is it still up?
Well, go to Slate. It's an article in Slate entitled, and it'll link you to the statement, a fake site posted an apology for the Mormon Church's history of racism. Black Mormons wish it was real.
Awesome.
Maybe just put in Slate fake Mormon apology.
Will do.
It's good stuff. Well, I can't wait until you get your results back. Kelly just sent me a copy of hers, and wow, that is absolutely fascinating. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll come out. I should have it by.
And by the way, from a fellow Californian, Terrace writes in and says, "Oh no, Tracy, Native Americans were enslaved by Father Sarah," which is absolutely true.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
And when the Spanish first arrived in Mexico, with Nueva España, they tried to enslave the locals, but a lot of them just, if they hadn't already been killed by disease. They preferred to just die outright than be enslaved. And so that's another leg of the reasoning behind the origins of the slave trade. They had to have somebody to do the work because they damn sure weren't going to do it.
White folks, weak-ass motherfuckers, they weren't going to do that shit.
Yeah. Tracy, have yourself a lovely evening.
You too, my love. Talk to you later.
Bye now. The irrepressible Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from, what was it, out on the 101? So we have, we've almost crossed into hour number three. God, I hate talking about this, but, you know, we try to raise $200 every evening. And we remain at zero. And that's what it is. Let's see. Other stuff. Just a quick note. Are you familiar with, like, the ski gear? Wow. The ski gear, Balle, B-O-L-L-E, helmets, goggles, shit like that. Have you ever gone hiking and used a Camelback hydration pack? If you're a cyclist, have you ever had any stuff from Giro, G-I-R-O, Giro maybe, I don't know. Well, you might be interested to know that all of those company, all those companies that look like different companies, well, they're owned by a giant corporate holding company. I think we've talked about this in the past, but it's worth reiterating in the aftermath of Santa Fe. Bushnell Golf Optics, Bale, Serengeti, the world's most advanced eyewear. Like I said, Camelback, Giro, Bell helmets, you know, motorcycle helmets, Bell helmets. American Eagle, Tasco. Well, these are all brands that are owned by Vista Outdoors, who is also a manufacturer of firearms. And people are beginning to figure that out, and so they're saying they won't do business with any of the companies owned by Vista Brands. One of my favorite outdoor companies, REI, runs a co-op. You know, if you're a member of the co-op, you get a rebate at the end of the year every year. Cool company. I'd love to go to one of their stores sometime. They announced that they were going, in the wake of the Parkland massacre, REI said, well, we've suspended orders from Vista Outdoor Brands, bike helmets, water bottles, whatever, because of their direct connection with assault rifles. And this made Vista Outdoors cry. It gave them a sad. Way down deep inside a 10K filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission last week, Vista Brands whined about a substantial increase in the use of social media platforms, including blogs, social media websites, and other forms of internet-based communications, which allow individuals access to a broad audience of consumers. And because of Parkland, it may have a negative impact on our business and our shareholders. Consumers value readily available information and often act on such information without further investigation and without regard to its accuracy or context. The harm may be immediate without affording us an opportunity for redress or correction. There was a campaign launched on social media seeking the boycott of certain outdoor products brands because of their association with the company and its brands that operate in the shooting sports industry. Yeah, you know, maybe if you didn't manufacture assault rifles, that wouldn't happen to your not-assault rifle brands. I know. I know. Amazing, isn't it? Let's go over and check in with Sparky. Or not Sparky. Punky. Not Punky. Scott!
Well, it's one of us.
Somebody's got to be there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Scott and Punky.
Punky was as quiet as a church mouse all afternoon until he saw me grab the device so I could ring you up, and now he's just going on and on.
Well, Punky knows he's a star.
He's a star. And he's adjusting nicely to before the Hearts Bonanza blend for cockatiels underwent some kind of reformulation some months back, and he seemed to like it, but he didn't like it quite as well as before they made the change. So I was browsing around online and found this other stuff, and he kind of likes it, but I'll probably just switch back to the Hearts because what the hell, he's thrived on it for the better part of 20 years. Why stop now, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, at 20, he probably wouldn't appreciate change to his routine.
Well, I was, when I finally...
20-year-old birds get set in their ways.
Oh, I know, I know. When I found it, oh, Lord, I guess he was maybe 4 or 5 years old at that point. And no matter what brand of cockatiel food I would give him, there would always be one or two ingredients in it that he didn't like. And he would express his dislike by scattering the offending parts all over the damn place. So it was like a godsend to find the Hart's Bonanza for cockatiels, because that was the first food he was ever on that he not only enjoyed, but didn't, you know, knock the offending bits, you know, all over the cage and the floor and everywhere else. But anyway, that's not why I called.
It's damned interesting.
Okay, well, yeah, anybody who has questions about cockatiels, I'm the guy.
It's time for Cockatiel Talk with Scott and Bunky. Now, but, all the way live from San Diego, here's your host.
Yes. I was watching a YouTube video the other night that deciphered cockatiel behavior and learned a few things. And you're never too old to learn, I always say. But I sent you a link. Tracy turned me on to the fact that there had been a TV pilot version of Blazing Saddles, which I never knew. Or if I had known it, I had forgotten it. And I sent you the YouTube link.
Yeah, I've got it
and
here.
And apparently, I didn't look at too much of it because I was listening to the call. But apparently Steve Landisberg had a role. I'm guessing he was in the Gene Wilder.
Oh, God, he was hilarious.
The alcoholic fast gun. But here's
something
I
did know. Yeah, but I
shoot
with this
hand.
Right.
Here's something I did know about Blazing Saddles. Originally cast in the Gene Wilder part was the longtime actor Gig Young, who apparently had just gotten over a really bad bout with the bottle and wasn't completely past it, and apparently the first day of shooting went into a fit of some sort. I mean, a medical fit, you know, foaming at the mouth and writhing all over the floor. So they had to recast that part, and that's what caused it to go to Gene Wilder, who I've always loved ever since The Producers.
Oh, without a doubt.
But anyway, I sent you that link. And when you all were talking about being black in America, it made me think back to a program that was on CBS in 1968 that was hosted by Bill Cosby. And it was quite well done. And I think he mentions the thing about Hattie McDaniels. But it's called Black History, Lost, Stolen, or Strayed. And it's on YouTube, and it's been a while since I've watched it, but as I recall, it's quite good. But in genealogy stuff, I have yet to send in for mine, although my niece is the family genealogist, and she shared some of the ancestry charts and graphs and different things. And I've determined that I am descended from a long, long line of bullshit delivered to somebody in the back of a Buick. That's my that's my nearest guess as to how I came to be. But that's neither here nor there. I've toyed with the idea of getting the blood test thing done, but. You know,
a cheek swab. There's no blood involved.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. It is you spit in the thing or, I don't know. There's so many of these tests. But then after that the serial killer getting caught by a commercial DNA thing. That's that, and I'm not a, I don't have a hidden past or anything like that, other than some of the hidden stuff, but nothing so drastic.
Well, that's not the real concern. It's what can happen down the road when this stuff begins, well, not begins, but continues to be used for commercial purposes beyond the criminal law.
Yeah. Like,
oh, I'm sorry. We looked online at the DNA database, and we found out that there's a history of nose cancer in your family. We're sorry, you can't have insurance.
Yeah. And for a while, that wasn't a consideration, given, you know, no prohibitions for pre-existing conditions. But now, with the fucking GOP in charge, it's anybody's guess how secure we all are going to be medically. So,
yeah, which is like not.
But I apologize. I was out of the loop for the better part of last week, simply because we are in the first of 2 months in the year.
Oh, there went Scott. I trust that we'll have him back in just a moment. There he is. You gotta be a little more careful, Scott.
Yeah, sorry about that. The Wi-Fi in this place, when it comes to Skype calls, is very. It didn't used to be this bad, but anyway, I was out of the loop basically because of May gray and June gloom, and those are my two favorite months out here because the weather is on the cool side and overcast during most of May and most of June, and before the hot weather really sets in. So I found myself, it's excellent sleeping weather. So I basically slept in all week last week. So I've lost track of where you are in the great Breaking Bad marathon.
I've been away from it for a solid week and a half or more. I'm still I'm still where I was. I'm somewhere in season three. I haven't given up on it. I just haven't had time to watch.
Yeah. How are you finding it? Are you finding it to be everything we've said
it's,
it is?
It's really quite good.
Yeah, and it's going to get better. No spoilers, but I'm telling you, Bob, by the time you're done with it...
I'm going to be brokenhearted, I'm sure.
Well, I think you'll find that exquisite television is not an overstatement in terms of how I reviewed it. I've revisited that series several times now, thanks to it being on Netflix. And I'm telling you, I can't find any weakness in it at all. Even some of the less than stellar episodes, when compared to the vast TV wasteland, they're all good. And the care and thought that the people who brought us that show put into it is just without equal, as near as I can find. Now, there may have been other shows since that have come along that are as good or better, but I'm telling you, it's a high bar that they've got to get over. So, you know, that's my deal on Breaking Bad, and I am just counting down the weeks now or months before Better Call Saul returns, because it's going to start heating up. And it took a little while to get into, but I've found it to be a different program, obviously, but of that same ilk in terms of really being thoughtful television and well-crafted. So,
well, what I am into these days is the latest from The Expanse and Westworld. I'm almost all caught up with Westworld.
Yeah, I noticed that the earlier episodes are on HBO Go, And I think that'll be my next foray into binge watching. What do you know about this show, The Americans?
Nothing.
I keep hearing good things about it in terms of how authentic it is. And apparently it's about Russian spies who integrate themselves into American society, unless I'm thinking of something else. And that seems to be a timely thing. And except for the
current... I've read a couple of good things. Asa points out that Goliath is coming back for a second season on June 15th, and he says, I can't wait. Not to be a spoiler or anything, but I thought that thing just kind of ended pretty, well, pretty authoritatively.
That's the Billy Bob Thornton Amazon show. Okay, yeah, that's another one that I've got on my list. But oh, and by the way, somebody mentioned Squidbillies earlier. I have tried on all the browsers that I have access to, and I am not having any luck at all. So I'll have to find an alternate source to watch some of that Squidbillies programming. I thought it might have been a setting on my computer, but I reconfigured stuff in all the different browsers, and I couldn't get it to work right.
Damn. Well, you know, the other thing, do you still have HBO at all?
Oh, yeah, I've got HBO and then the basic local
cable.
Well,
what I found fascinating about where Westworld is going, no spoilers, is that, you know, for the Takeshi Kovacs series by Richard K. Morgan, which was made into such a hopeless hash of cliched science fiction by Netflix, deals with, on a very serious level, some meditations on immortality, mortality, eternity, and, you know, the meaning and value of life.
Now, what show is that?
Altered Carbon. Don't watch it.
It's just
horrible.
Yeah.
But what's really kind of weird is watching Westworld, it's almost like they sort of harvested a lot of the ideas that Richard K. Morgan was putting forward way, way, way back in the early aughts. That was not in the original Westworld movie. They harvested a lot of those ideas, and they're finding their way through Westworld, and it's almost like what they turned into Altered Carbon was the leavings.
Hmm. Now, wasn't Westworld originally a Michael Crichton book?
I don't know if it was a book, but I know, you know, I think he was in on the movie.
Yeah. Because normally his stuff that's been made into films has been pretty good. I remember the original Andromeda Strain, I think, was one of his. Well, I'll have to start watching Westworld. Well, there's no end to the stuff that's out there to watch, and that's my biggest complaint. You know, it's like first there was Mad Men, and then there was Breaking Bad, and of course The Sopranos before either of them. And now with the proliferation of Netflix, to another extent, what is that other one where the girls in the bonnets are Hulu?
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, Handmaid's Tale. I mean, there's just like a glut of programming, all of it clamoring for your eyeballs and your attention. And then you run into the situation, well, there's only a certain number of hours in the day. But a lot of it is worthy stuff. I mean, you look at the award shows, and it's like a horn of plenty in terms of quality programming. And I don't know how the networks, the over-the-air networks, are even making it in today's world because, you know, first of all, the average hour program, 22 minutes of it, is commercials and promos. So they've got that to contend with. And then with it being over the air, there's content prohibitions where they don't have all the tools in their box to tell the stories, simply because, you know, the crazies.
And yet Breaking Bad premiered on what, AMC?
Yeah, basic cable. Well, hell, I mean, they...
But it aired late enough at night that they could get away with a few magic words.
Well, yeah, they had to, and I've got the DVD set of Breaking Bad, and if you listen to the audio commentary, they recount the battles, even on AMC, that they had over how many fucks they would get per season or episode and how many bullshits. So even on basic cable, it wasn't the same as premium like Showtime or Cinemax or HBO. But God, was a well done show. You know, people say we don't build good stuff in this country. Well, I point to shows like Breaking Bad. And granted, it's entertainment. But it's fine entertainment in my book. But that's still not what I called.
Of course not.
What is the deal with Giuliani saying that there's a September 1st cutoff in this Mueller investigation, at least?
Oh, he's just making shit up.
Oh, Jesus. Well, here it is, not quite June. So you've got June, July, and August. That's more or less 90 days. Mueller can do a hell of a lot of good things between now and then. So I wouldn't.
Well, I've just been trying to keep an eye on the breaking news because, after all, Rod Rosenstein and Chris Wray were called to bow and scrape before Geezer discussed us at the White House today, where he was going to hereby demand.
Yeah, I saw that. So what are they? Are they holding firm? Because I think they were the two who were pointing out to him stuff that he obviously wasn't aware of, like, oh, the it's an executive department in the government, but it's not like when Hoover ran it.
Yeah, you can't hear. Right. Well, as Charlie Pierce pointed out earlier today, John Mitchell went to prison for doing exactly what Trump is demanding that the FBI do.
Yeah, you dropped out a little bit.
John Mitchell went to prison for doing exactly what Trump is demanding the FBI do.
Bingo. The what did he call it? The parade of horrors?
Well, you know, it had a little to do with the enemies list. There was that.
Yeah. The Houston plan. I'm sure you remember that.
Yep.
God, do we learn nothing in this country? I mean, why do we constantly have to relearn old lessons?
We're not relearning. The people who are doing this thought that, you know, Nixon should have gotten away with it in the first place.
Oh, I know. Roger Stone and all that. You know, the crazy fucker's got a larger-than-life-size tattoo of Richard Nixon's face on his back. Jesus, how crazy do you have to be to play that game? You know? Oh, and speaking of stuff to watch, the other night, last night, I guess it was, I did a binge watch of the 4-episode series on Netflix that came from Channel 4 in the UK. Trump, An American Dream.
Yeah, and Agnes watched that and turned me on to it, and it's, whoa.
I thought it was quite well done. In that I saw footage that I never knew existed. of the younger Trump when he was first starting out, and even
yeah.
Fred and Mary were featured in this thing. And I'm sorry that they didn't delve more into dysfunction in Trump's childhood, because you know it had to have existed. I mean, just the fact that he was so uncontrollable at one point that they had to send him off to military academy for, what, from age 13 to 18?
They didn't send him there because they expected he was going to be a great general. They sent him there because he was an abominable human being.
Yeah. And everything you need to know about Trump was told by Mrs. Trump, the mother, about, and I never knew he had a younger brother named Robert, but apparently they both were given a set of building blocks, those wooden blocks that we all used to play with.
Yes.
And Donald asked his younger brother, Robert, demanded that he give Trump his building blocks. And when came time for them to be given back, little Robert found that Trump had glued Robert's blocks together with his blocks. So there was no way to get them back. So that says it all about that smarmy bastard.
Well, isn't Robert the one who went on to have terrible troubles with alcohol and drugs and died young?
No, that was the older brother, Fred Jr.
Oh, okay.
You talk about a nightmare Pandora's box of family dysfunction and dynamics. I would like to read the official history or the psychiatrist's notes or, you know, whoever was keeping tabs on the family. Because it certainly has to exist somewhere. And as a kid, they went to Norman Vincent Peale's church, the Marble Collegian Church in Manhattan. You know, and Peale was famous for his Power of Positive Thinking book.
Oh, yes.
Well, I can't think of another human being on the planet who is less typical or who less typifies, either thinking or anything positive than Donald Trump. So you got to figure that little bastard was napping, you know, during most of the service.
But, it just didn't apply to him.
No,
well, in terms of the pathologies of Trump, keep an eye out, the Letterman program on Netflix. My next guest needs no introduction.
Yeah.
It will be Howard Stern.
Oh, no.
and Howard and Dave talk about Trump's appearances there.
Oh, wow. Well, they go way back anyway, back when Dave had the NBC late night program. Stern was on there all the time.
NBC.
WNBC. I think all of us who have done radio have worked for a pig vomit like.
They kind of all are.
And Paul Giamatti was excellent in that role. I forget the guy's real name. He's dead now. Pig Vomit, the program director, was based on. Oh, God, what was his name? Kevin Matheny, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But everybody who spent any time working in radio in the 70s or 80s had to deal with a program director like that.
Yeah, just Howard, awful.
I'm gonna tutor you on the proper way to deliver that WNBC call letters. You've got to stretch it up.
Oh, I still love that movie. I think, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Howard Stern, but never been a fan. Every now and then something interesting, but, for the most part, no. Well, lost Scott again, and there's Scott back. We got to stop meeting like this, Scott. Scott?
Yeah.
There you are.
Okay, sorry about that. I'm probably going to go here because I don't know what's with this Skype and Wi-Fi. I don't have this trouble with the telephone, but for some reason, you know, the signal is just dropping off left and right.
That's odd.
In Skype. But anyway, I'm glad we were able to catch up, and I get back on that Breaking Bad kick because you're in for treats galore. It'll be harrowing, but I'm telling you, it's well worth it.
I'm not going to give up halfway through or anything, but I don't know what's good. I hope this isn't a sign of things to come, these connection problems. But no, Scott, I'm not going to give up on it. I'll get back to it. I've got a job to do, and damn well will. So we are at 8:27. And, of course, fundraising for the evening is a goose egg. But there's other stuff, too, that begs our attention this evening. Oh, by the way, Ron just recommended Fahrenheit 451 to me. I've been of two minds about watching it, primarily just because. I was reading a blurb about it earlier today, and talking about the fact that Michael B. Jordan, who stars as Montag in Fahrenheit 451. Said initially he was concerned about taking the role because he figured given Montag's role of rounding up dissidents, that he figured it'd just be a role of constantly rounding up people of color. And when he was told that no, it'll be a nice diverse roundup. He decided to take the role and said, after the director told him, no, there'll be lots of different people getting rounded up. And he said, I was like, oh shit, I'm so programmed and desensitized and trained to feel and think that way because it's so relevant with the police brutality in my community and the shootings. I was so conditioned to think and feel that way. I was like, man, that's even more reason why I need to take this role. And it's on HBO. But the thing is, the blurb went on to say, this is just how the paragraph reads. Jordan told the Daily Beast that although Bradbury's seminal novel depicting a book-burning dystopia was written in response to McCarthyism and the Red Scare, many of the book's themes ring true today. Here's the problem, if I understand my Ray Bradbury scholarship correctly, and a very dear friend of mine from long ago was such a Ray Bradbury scholar that he became close friends with Ray Bradbury. It's not a book about McCarthyism. Fahrenheit 451 is not about a book about McCarthyism. If you know Fahrenheit 451, and damn it, the book's been out there for a long time, so I'm not going to worry about spoilers, and I don't know what the creators of the program have done to it anyway. But you'll recall that in the book, people's living rooms are nothing but full-size walls of video screens. And people actually interact with the television programs. They're actually in the programs somehow, computer magic, whatever. Ray Bradbury again, if I recall my scholarship correctly. Ray Bradbury, when later interviewed, said, I wasn't writing that about McCarthyism or the Red Scare or anything. I wrote that in the 1950s about the influence of television on reading. Because the central plot of Fahrenheit 451 is that firemen go around setting fires, burning books, because books are illegal. And everybody watches TV. I could be wrong, but I could swear I remember reading an interview before he died with Ray Bradbury in which he said, that's all wrong. I wrote the book about the effect of TV on literacy. And that what other people brought to it interpretively was their own. So I'll probably give the first episode or two a watch and see if it's worthwhile. But if it's real heavy-handed, I don't know. Matt in San Francisco says, do I have this right? School kids are safer in Afghanistan than in an American school. Well, at least male school kids, maybe. HIV, as well as women firing from fleeing from back alley abortions in African countries because the funding for these programs has been cut. The body count of Palestinians is on the rise because we moved the embassy. The First Lady's new Be Best program has been plagiarized from a government pamphlet from a few years ago. And we're now creating more jobs in China. And Americans are cheering and appreciating all the wonderful things that are happening. What the fuck has happened to critical thinkers in this great country? Well, I think we can start, Matt, by putting O-N-C-E hyphen in front of great, this once great country. I started referring to the United States as this once great country back in 2004 when I got back behind the microphone. Because it was pretty obvious to me back then that we were on a long downhill slide. But this is, you know, this is, and this is the danger we face. This is a long process of downhillism that long predates Donald Trump. He just makes it so much bigger and more garish. But it's been quietly going on for a generation or two. So that, you know, that bears keeping in mind. And this country has also always had a racist element to it. I received a number of emails from our friend Terrace on this very topic over the last day or so. Quite perspective, Terrace. Terrace said this afternoon, most mass murders are the result of well-executed Christian parenting. I never asked anyone out on a date. I never pestered anyone to spend time with me on a Saturday night because I was lonely. Yet I had special people in my youth, contemporaries whom I will remember at least until I lose my mind. Therefore, I can't say I'm better than these Christian man-children who harass, assault, and murder women who reject their advances. All I can ask is, what the fuck is wrong with their parents? But perhaps I should meditate on the fact that Christians dropped two nuclear bombs on Japan and firebombed countless cities in Europe and Asia. Bob, what the fuck is wrong with Christians? They keep reproducing despite the grotesque monsters hiding inside their clean, white, human bodies. And that's thought-provoking indeed. But there is a degree of ugliness that runs through this country that is breathtaking to behold. I've got multiple stories here. A guy in Florida, a white guy in Florida, Dustin Hughes, who lives somewhere near Pembroke Pines in Florida. Beginning on May 5th, he placed four separate calls in 1 week to the Jamaat UL Mutakeen Mosque in Pembroke Pines. And left the messages. You fucking Muslim piece of shit. I planted a bomb in your temple. I'm going to blow your fucking temple up, you fucking Muslim piece of shit. Where you guys have your sanctuary and worship Allah, I'm going to blow that motherfucker up. I have a detonator. I'm going to cause that motherfucker to go off. You guys are all going to be up in flames after I'm done with you. You guys want to come here and cause mayhem to America? Well, I'm going to cause mayhem to your religion. Because your religion is nothing but lies, 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 lies from the devil. Where's Allah now? And that was just one of his messages. There were three more. 6 days ago, he was arrested on the first day of Ramadan. Irony. By agents of the federal government. He lives in Cutler Bay, Florida. When investigators told him that his calls had instilled terror into the innocent people who worshipped at that mosque, they reported that he clapped his hands and said, "Good." It goes without saying that his Facebook profile picture is a Confederate flag with heritage, not hate. He's looking at up to 10 years in prison if he's convicted. He won't do it. By the way, Dimitrios Pigortsis will not face the death penalty in Texas, cannot face the death penalty in Texas, and even if convicted, could conceivably be out on parole or up for parole in 40 years. I'm not a proponent of the death penalty, so but still. Meanwhile, how about Oregon? North Bend, Oregon. A graduating senior there by the name of Liv Funk was repeatedly subjected to homophobic slurs, bullying, viciousness, by her classmates. One male student, hit her with his skateboard. She put up with it. And finally, she went to the school resource officer. And told him what was going on.
And that's when the fine, upstanding Christian resource officer said to her, well, as she quoted it, he said that if I'm going to be an open member of the LGBT community, that I should prepare for things like this. The officer said that being gay was a choice, and it was against his religion. He said that he had homosexual friends, but because I was an open homosexual, I was going to hell. God is love, y'all. According to KVAL-TV, the Oregon Department of Education found that, quote, discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation may have occurred at the school. Because more than one student went to the administration of the school complaining about it. And the school did absolutely nothing to remedy the situation. I didn't know that. Randy tells me Ray Bradbury was once a contestant on Groucho Marx's game show, You Bet Your Life. Say the secret word and win a prize. Didn't know that. The things I learn on this program. Let's run over to the phones real quick. Hey, Todd.
Hey.
What's happening?
I don't know. The program was dropping out for me a few times. So I heard... first of all, yeah, so Scott was right about, well, let me go back to Westworld. When I told you about Westworld, you poo-pooed it. I was like, you're going to like Westworld. You're going to like it. And you were like, nah, I'm not going to like that.
That might have been back before I even had HBO.
I think it was. I mean, no, it was because I was watching it, you know, like on a site, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah, but. You know, and it encouraged me to go back and watch, because I was a little kid. I think it was like 73 or something like that when the first movie came out. Encouraged me. I think it's on YouTube now. It's old. And to watch that one. But yeah, that now I've lost the link, and I don't have HBO, and I was really, really... I wanted to know what happens after Sandy gets up. She goes to the real world off of the train. That's where I left off, and I had to figure out what happens after that.
It gets a little complicated. That's all I'll say.
I just can't imagine. She is so smart. I can't imagine her being out in the world. Oh, my God. Damn. Okay. Well, anyway, I know somebody will... I have friends that will tell me, but they know...
Yeah, no spoilers. No spoilers.
No spoilers. The other thing, I just caught the last piece of that Ray Bradbury comparison you were talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, I mean, look at all these good works he had. Like, I mean, I always liked Fahrenheit 451. I always loved that book. You know, it was simple, it was short, but it was really powerful, you know? But Animal Farm, I thought, was about to not...
That's Orwell.
Oh, that's Orwell. That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, and that's something. I got my authors mixed up. Imagine that.
I remember the Martian Chronicles was a brilliant book of short stories.
Right, right, right. Exactly. So, you know, on to the favorite subject, I guess. One of them with Trump. But one thing about the schools, and I just have to say this from someone with a lot of experience in and out of, like, can't tell you how many schools all over the country. We were just talking about Bendor. But there is something, like all the Title I schools in inner city, Newark, Philly, D.C., Baltimore, there's always the students have to enter through one place and go through the magnetometer. They have to show their ID And if you're a visitor, you have to go to the desk, and that's just the way it is. And they don't seem to have the shooting issues in those types of schools. I mean, the fire doors, you can always get out, but there has to be a single entry. And because we're not going to get rid of these guns, we've got to do that. Yeah, see,
But like I said the other night, Todd, I think we have to at least be honest enough with ourselves to admit that as long as we're talking about anything but the root cause, namely the easy access to firearms, then we're making excuses for firearms. You know what I mean?
Sure, but the country's not ready. I mean, they're not ready. So it's a moot point. They're not ready.
But that's a horrifying concept. I mean, I'm not gooning on you.
I guess you don't get it. It has the half of their family. You know, no. They're never going to be ready. These people have.
No, I mean, we can. And I hate to constantly use this as the benchmark, but you know, the South wasn't ready in 1861, despite a national outcry against slavery. And through the late 1940s into the 1950s, look at Letter from Birmingham Jail. There's that passage in there where Dr. King writes about, you know, the worst problem that he has, that the movement had, was not the Klansmen, but the well-meaning middle-of-the-roaders who say, well, we agree with you, we understand you, but we're not quite ready yet. Just wait a little while longer. And Dr. King defined that pretty clearly, pretty brilliantly. And it seems to me like we've come to the same place with guns. Because,
well,
frankly,
we talked about this.
There's no amount of blood that can be shed that will make these paranoid, pasty-faced, doughy white people ready to say that a child's ability to go from being a six-year-old's ability to be a seven-year-old is more important than their paranoid gun fantasies. Because that's what they are at the end of the day. Paranoid gun fantasies.
Well, the C-SPAN callers have been very interesting lately on this topic.
Well, Bill in Allentown wants to know first if you saw Mo Brooks on Friday on C-SPAN.
I did. Mo Brooks is, what a fucking liar. Oh, my God. C-SPAN has been having some dynamite programs. Yeah, Mo Brooks is a dumbass. He really is dumb. What did you say? Mo Brooks, less brains. Yeah, that's the truth. What an idiot. But just like with these people that call in, you know, all these gunners, you know, whatever you want to call them, they fail to at the end. It's about the guns. It's too many guns. And they just don't want to say, no, it's not the guns, and it's this, it's that, everybody's over-medicated, and da, da, da. Well, if they didn't have the gun, they couldn't do it.
Well, but hold on. I mean, you and I have some fairly, we carry on clown around a little bit. We have some serious conversations, too. You just said something that I've spent a lot of time over the weekend thinking about. Too many guns. How many guns are an okay amount of guns for untrained, unprepared people to possess? Because we're not gonna get their fat asses out there and march them around in militia form. You know, ain't gonna be none of this Monty Python marching up and down the square bullshit. They're gonna remain unprepared, unready, untrained. So how many guns is an okay amount of guns?
Listen.
No, it's a horrible question, Todd. Because
I'm gonna tell you one of the reasons it's horrible. It's because the states are so different, and look at where you live. Now you can walk around with open carry with anything you want, basically, and just walk in, buy it, walk around with
concealed
it, right?
carry.
concealed.
Yeah, no permit required if you're over 21. Just drop it in your pocket and go.
That's it. No nothing. Now, that's one extreme. Then you got the other extremes in different states. So, obviously, it has to be a national thing. I mean, that's where you have to start. That's common sense. But the thing is, it's the culture, Bob. All right, for instance, two or three weeks ago, we had two counties above me, one county, York County. Guy's running for a local race there. So he pulls out his loaded revolver and just lays it on the table and goes, and says, that gun ain't hurting nobody. What's all this talk about guns? Ain't the guns, it's the people. Now, this firearm is loaded. Now, anything could happen.
Right, yeah.
And he's his opponent is putting up on charges. I don't know where this is right now, but I'm just saying that's the culture we're dealing with. And remember that story I told you about, last year, tractor trailer, this guy out in the country, like down in Orangeburg, takes off, I don't know if he's selling meth, or I don't know what he's doing, but he takes people's used stuff, including guns, and he had a whole old tractor trailer on his property. Full of various firearms, including cannons. So the only thing, I don't know, a huge buyback, that's one place, that's one way to start. But I don't know what to say. This is the new slavery issue. This is the new wedge issue for the country. It's the new slavery issue. And to make it, we're still talking about secession here in this state.
It's the home of secession.
Now we have two gun manufacturers here now, and they do that shit on purpose. And now they're moving into heavier munitions. You see, so they're getting ready. They're like, we got to succeed. We're gonna have everything we need. We're gonna have guns, cannons, they can't come get us. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm around these people, man. I'm telling you. I'm not kidding, right?
No, I know you're not. You're not kidding. Mm-mm. But the thing is, there's a rational conversation to be had. We're not going to role play it or anything here. But if you were a gun owner, I could sit down across from you and say, all right, you want to own guns. Read me the Second Amendment. And you'd get past that well-regulated, let you read the whole thing and say, okay, the well-regulated militia meets every Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. There's going to be a lot of marching. There's going to be a lot of sweating. There's going to be some running and some climbing. And there's going to be, well, when do I get to shoot my gun? Well, when you pass the test. You're not going to shoot it until we're certain you know how to handle it. And you're damn sure not going to get ammunition until we know that you're not nuts. You'll have a battery of psychological testing to make sure that you're stable enough to... And the conversation's over. Well, ain't what the Second Amendment says. Well, actually, Booger, it does say that. A well-regulated militia.
Well-regulated.
So, you can join up. Now, here's the funny thing. That might actually, because we got so many gun humpers in this country, there might be all kinds of people wanting to join up. And that may actually be more dangerous because you'd have the same sort of situation that obtained in the United States prior to 1861. 50 petty kingdoms
all with their own private armies. You know, Arkansas might have a beef over water with Louisiana and decide that it needed to be dealt with, you know, by contest of arms. Maybe Texas decides that they're on Arkansas's side, but not Louisiana's, so they get into it. And then Missouri says, well, you can't treat our neighbor Arkansas that way. Next thing you know, you got a shit ton of well-regulated militias marching around the country.
Oh, God.
Well-regulated, you know? But the fact of the matter is, the three-fifths clause to the Constitution of the United States is a goddamned anachronism, okay? We can all agree on that, right? There are other anachronisms within the Constitution. The Second Amendment is an anachronism, too.
Right. Right.
Isn't it funny that people who want to control women's decisions about their insides... Isn't it funny that they want the decisions made by the several states, but it drives them crazy that the states are permitted to make laws about guns?
Well, they don't operate on logic.
I mean, it's always fun to talk to a Christian around here and say, you love the little fetuses, don't you? Yeah, abortion's murder. And you think we ought to amend the Constitution to make sure that no woman can get an abortion legal? Got to protect little fetuses, absolutely. So then when we get around to making some constitutional amendments to try to make sure kids don't get shot up in school, you can't do that, Second Amendment. I mean, this is the nature of the problem.
Let's say this. You know, every parent should know. I don't care how much you love your damn gun. When you have all these children now who don't even go to a school that has witnessed this type of shooting, children all over are scared to go to school. They're scared. Not everybody, but enough. And once again, this falls into Trump's rubric of dismantling our societal institutions. Because you already got these folks who like Trump. You know, they're all for homeschooling. They want their wife to be home anyway. You know, they prefer their kids not be, you know, with the other folks in the public school anyway, some of them, a lot of them. I mean, that's just from what I've seen. I talk to these people. I talk to a lot of people. And, you know, between that.
Like, yeah, I do too. When I travel around here. And this is not to say that I do not have sympathy. And oh God, I'm afraid it'll be a jinx. But we haven't. You know, every now and then there'll be something creepy go on at a school. But I mean, I remember when they sent our kids home one day because there was diesel fuel in the water supply. That's the kind of problems we have here. But we haven't had one of these things. Yet.
Now, is your school open? This has a lot to do with how schools are designed. And for instance, in Florida, California, parts of Virginia, mainly in the South and parts of the West, they have schools that have buildings that are spread out and they're like causeways in between. This is warmer weather states. So you'll have like an awning, there'll be a walkway in between buildings. And the doors are open because the kids have to go between classes. So I'm sorry it's going to cost money, but if you want your guns, guess what? You're going to have to pay for that. You're going to have to pay. That's a tax. It's not my fault.
Oh, maybe raise some... maybe raise some property taxes there in Texas and Alabama. Ooh, all them fiscal conservatives are going to have a plum fit, Todd.
You can't have it both ways, Bob. Listen, these people have gotten used to having it. Look what they're doing with morals now. We have a sex worker who, look, there's no way around it. You know, he was dealing with a sex worker. the president. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the president. But even still, if that was us a couple years ago, come on. Obama couldn't even tinkle on his pants. He came out of the bathroom with a spot on his pants. They were going to, you know, chastise him. He couldn't do a thing. That was a terrible example, but you know what I mean. He couldn't do a thing. And now, and this is a total non sequitur, but I know you have to go, but I can't get over, I'm going to say it, the president. This is why we have to have someone sane as president. This motherfucker's insane. Now, he is not a good negotiator at all. First of all, he went into this North Korea thing. Already saying, well, you know what? They're just going to have to give up all their nukes. That's not how you negotiate, you dumbass motherfucker. That's stupid. And does he understand that most of the world is used to haggling? That's new shit to us. They've been doing it. Anyway, so he says, yeah, you know, and if he doesn't do it, well, you know, brings up, you already talked about it, you know, brings up Gaddafi. What the fuck is that supposed to do?
I don't know. If I was Kim Jong-un, because, see, he had no idea that what Bolton was talking about was not what he was thinking about. Bolton was talking about one thing, and he was talking about going in and killing Gaddafi. And so he was trying to threaten Kim Jong-un again. And he's going to get owned in this. And American prestige and American stature, whatever is left of it, is going to diminish even further. Too bad, so sad.
This is going to blow up in his face, and he's so weak. He is such a weak man.
Well, why do you think this? The thing's falling apart. He surrendered on his trade war with China yesterday. He caught that. And so necessarily, Mike Pence was out there today rattling the sabers of war against Iran. And son of a gun, I went to put $20 in the gas tank. And, you know, a little saber rattling in the Middle East is always good for a little more on the shareholder quarterly dividend. And my gallon of gas has gone up to $2.85 a gallon. Jesus, I remember. I'm so old, I remember the Obama administration when there was actually when the Saudis were so desperate that they were crushing the Bakken fuel, the Bakken fields, by driving the price of gas down to near a damn dollar a gallon. Elections have consequences, yep. Do they not?
They do. They do.
And we're the ones paying those consequences. None of this is going to touch Trump. Jesus, there was some weirdo from Mark Penn, a pollster for Bill Clinton back in the day, had this thing published at The Hill earlier today about how we've got to stop the deep state. We've got to stop Mueller and the deep state for the sake of all presidents, for the sake of the future, for America.
I saw that byline. I didn't read it.
Holy shit. I read it.
That looked crazy.
I couldn't write anything that nuts if I was on the brown acid. Hey. We got to get out of here, Todd.
Yeah, okay. Hey, man. Take care now. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, by the way, I made even more kick-ass ribs this weekend. Agnes says they're just getting better. New trick, Todd. New trick. When you make the brine for brining your ribs, throw in a can of mixed pickling spice. You know, like you do for like bread and butter pickles and that stuff.
Sure.
Because it's the same thing they use in the little packets in corned beef.
Yeah, the little dry packet.
Yeah, with the mustard seeds and the allspice and
Yeah.
Bay leaf.
Pickling spice.
Yeah, throw that in with the brine.
And little round coriander corns.
Yeah, I think that's allspice. But there's probably some, might be some coriander seed in there too. Mustard. But throw that in there and just, you know, keep it cool. 24 hours.
Mm. What?
Yeah, and then you take it out, and then you dab it dry and everything. Then you put on your rubs, wrap it up, stick it back in the fridge for another 8 hours. Then you're ready.
Damn.
Right.
Have you shared any with the butcher?
Say what?
Did you share any with the butcher yet?
Nah, I haven't gotten around to it, but I did. I saw my local grocery manager in the store today, and he said, "I got to buy a smoker, man. What should I get?" I just said, "Just get the acorn. Just get the acorn."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
be done with it.
You know, at two, okay, well. I realize that Kamado Joe and Big Green Egg or whatever, but for $250 versus $2,500, get the acorn.
Yeah,
you can buy one of those every 2 years and still be ahead.
And look how clean yours is. You know, I don't know how they are making that at such a lower rate.
Well, I mean, the materials aren't there, but and then the trick is once you're done with everything, you're still going to have some coals in there. So once you're done with everything, you've got everything off the fire. Shut it down. Open both dampers up wide open. Let it get up to furnace heat. Burns everything off. Then when it cools down, you go in with a scraper brush, not the metal ones, and you scrape everything down, and then you just re-oil, and you're done.
That's amazing. You got me sold. I think I'm ready. Because you look at what costs $230 or $200. You can spend $200 and get a rinky dink little.
Get a piece of crap, yeah. And this thing, I've filled it to capacity. It will do. It's snug, but it'll do it. It'll do 4 butts or 6 racks of ribs.
Holy cow! You can do 6 racks of ribs at one time?
Yeah, if you get the rib rack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it lay on end. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Man, that's beautiful. Oh, and by the way, I know you got to go. By the way, Food Lion here. We have Kaneki now.
Oh.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, it hurts
myself. So I don't know how close
you are. I was telling, we got a Food Lion in Summersville. I know they're not going to have Kaneki, but now I got to at least look. I told Agnes the other day, I said, I would love nothing more than a big pot of red beans and rice made with Kaneki. Oh.
Go, Bob. That sounds delicious.
All right. Yo, it is. It is. You got to make you some red beans and rice and use Kaneki. Call me.
I'll do it. I know what you're talking about. I haven't used the Kaneki to do it. But yeah, that's a nice
And Kaneki in gumbo? Whoa.
Well, it was made for gumbo.
Yeah.
Oh,
get out of town. Yeah. All right, Todd, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
See you, man.
Later. It's our buddy Todd. Got to get a little barbecue talk in at the very end. All right. I overshot by about 10 minutes, but I'll beg your apologies. We close the program. Having not done any fundraising. So tomorrow the fundraising goal will be $400. But I'll be here. Hope y'all will be here. Thank you all for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation ongoing. Thank you to the smaller number of you who actually keep the program going. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.